Fancy a game?
Grass grows, birds fly, sun shines, and brother, I hurt people.
You know what I think I'm going to do then? I'm going to take this right foot, and I'm going to whop you at that side of your face. And you want to know something? There's not a damn thing you're going to be able to do about it.
Medicare, I don't really know what that means, but it seems to give me a lot of energy.
It's Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, really bad football teams. The Raiders lost.
Woof.
UNLV lost.
Woof.
Hockey team won. Golden Knights.
Yeah.
They're back.
They're back.
They're back. Stanley Cup contenders. Once again. We'll get to some Golden Knights stuff. We'll get to some Raiders as well as, I guess, everyone's finally realizing they're tanking. It took them going to London and losing for everybody to figure it out. Hey, that team's tanking.
They don't seem to be trying real hard to build a winner.
We'll talk briefly to Mike Grimala as well. We got to get an update on what he ate while he was in Utah. Where was he saying he was going? Perkins?
Yep.
See if he actually went to Perkins. Supposedly, he might have eaten lasagna.
Ooh.
Which is interesting.
Spicy.
So, yeah. We're not talking to Mike very long. We just need to get an update on where he went to eat. We'll start with UNLV football because they lost 59-28 to Utah State. It was 42-7 at halftime. So
you could say they won the second half.
They did win the second half. They dominated that second half. The score only looks that close because Utah State kind of stopped trying in the second quarter. Like, Utah State was scoring at will, and then their last drive of the second quarter, they were like, all right, we're going to take the entire play clock down before we snap it. Okay, it's 42-7. We're good. And then they brought in their backup quarterback with 4 minutes left in the third quarter. So Utah State kind of stopped trying to score. But UNLV now has back-to-back losses by 30-plus points, and they've allowed 50-plus points in consecutive games for the first time under Tony Sanchez. And sort of the big picture view on this is that it's year four of Tony Sanchez in the middle of the season, and they are going backwards quickly.
Is it time to pull out the propane tank to get it hooked up to the seat? We haven't lit anything yet.
just getting it ready.
Is it time to get it ready?
Yeah, get it ready. Maybe. A lot of UNLV fans are way past the getting it ready part.
But realistically, there are other factors that are relevant to why the team isn't playing well. If you don't have to account for Armani Rogers, that basically means, okay, all we have to do is knock Lexington Thomas unconscious, and
the injury to Armani Rogers is, it's a fair excuse for why UNLV may have lost the last two games. It's not a fair excuse for why UNLV has been blown out in the last two games and why UNLV hasn't had a chance in the last two games. Because here's the thing on the Armani Rogers injury that is probably the most damning thing of the last 2 weeks. They've had 3 weeks since Armani got hurt. Like, during the bye week, they didn't know he was done for the year, but during the bye week, he didn't practice. It was Max Gillum taking the first team snaps the entire bye week. So they've basically had 3 weeks of Max Gillum being the quarterback, and they haven't figured out how to score. Like, they have not figured out how to move the ball with Max Gillum there. And it's become apparent over the last two games that this scheme and the roster was entirely built around Armani Rogers, which is fine. Like, he's your quarterback. He was the star player. Like, you should build it around him. But in the last 3 weeks, like, they've shown they don't have a plan B. Like, they can't, they don't have anything to do outside of that. Like, if Armani's not there, they can't figure out how to score. They can't figure out how to stay in games because the offense and the roster was built around Armani Rogers. And now that he's not there, it's like, oh, what do we do? They don't have a clue. Like, they don't know what to do to move the ball. And that's probably the most damning thing for Tony Sanchez the last 2 weeks, is that this coaching staff hasn't shown an ability to coach the last 2 weeks where, okay, the offense is still going to be able to put up points and stay in a game.
Technically correct. Depressing you on a Monday.
Like, it's like, that's probably the word. Like, here's the thing. The defense, is back to being a joke. Like, we thought they were better through four games, but they've been awful the last two. Utah State, used four wide receivers, and UNLV countered that by going to five and six defensive back coverages instead of, you know, your traditional three linebackers. And all Jordan Love did, Utah State's quarterback, all he did was pick on whoever was in one-on-one coverage. It didn't matter who it was. Like, it was Jericho Flowers sometimes, it was Alex Perry sometimes, it was Miles Plummer, Bryce Jackson. Like, it didn't matter what cornerback it was. They put four wide receivers out there. Jordan Love said, all right, there's the one-on-one coverage. That's where we're throwing the ball. Completion, 20 yards. Completion, touchdown. Like, that's all they did. Like, the defensive backs were not good. They couldn't handle one-on-one coverage. Jordan Love threw for 322 yards and five touchdowns, and he got pulled with 4 minutes to go in the third quarter.
Good God.
After they got 11 sacks in the first four games, UNLV hasn't had a sack in the last two. They don't have any interceptions. They have two pass breakups in the last two games. Like, the pass defense is, they're literally not doing anything.
Is somebody hurt?
Armani Rogers does not play defensive back, so no.
He could. He probably could.
But, like, the pass defense is just bad. Like, they don't generate coverage. They can't actually cover anybody. Like, UNLV fired Kent Bayer last year, the defensive coordinator, because they weren't getting enough, like, havoc plays. They weren't getting tackle for loss. They weren't getting sacks, no pass breakups, interceptions, forced fumbles. They weren't getting enough of those. And through the non-conference, it looked like, oh, wow, UNLV's actually getting some of these. But in the last two games, they just haven't gotten any of those. And, like, that's what got Kent Bayer fired. And so now Tim Skipper's here, and you've played two Mountain West games, and the defense is just bad. Now, the defense has been bad for Tony Sanchez the entire time. It was bad before Tony Sanchez has got here. Like, that's just a UNLV thing. They just have not had a good defense, like, ever. I think the year Bobby Houck took them to a bowl game, they were, like, top 100 in defensive efficiency. But every other year, it's, like, 111. They're good if they're 108. They're just bad defensively. But again, the most damning thing is the offense. Is just the fact that, like, they can't figure out how to score. And, like, they're trying things. They went under center in this game more than they probably ever have under Tony Sanchez. Like, UNLV doesn't go under center. But they did probably 10, 11 snaps in this game.
But didn't they also have five false starts?
Yes, those happened too. Yeah. I don't know how many it was, but there were quite a lot of false starts.
But I'm saying, like, okay, we're going under center. None of the offensive linemen know what they're doing. So it's like they're used to a different type of snap.
Yeah, they had a lot of, in the shotgun, they had a lot of two running back sets as well, which you've seen here and there, but UNLV usually is a one running back and either four wide receivers or a tight end and three wide receivers. That's almost always what they do. They even had one play where they went five wide receivers, which I think it's the first time in the Tony Sanchez era that they've gone five wide receivers on any snap. So, like, they tried some new stuff, but none of it worked. And, like, that's when you're looking at this program and you're looking at, like, how you're evaluating this season and the coaching staff as a whole on the field, it's been awful.
Oh, man. I don't even know what to say to that, because, well, I was listening to the game and watching the game on
Facebook. Facebook Live.
Yeah. Hey, one time at one point on Facebook, there were 3,000 concurrent viewers, which is like a low-level D&D stream on Twitch.
There were a lot. Listen, there was a Stadium who does the broadcast when it goes on Facebook. They did, it was Cornell and somebody else was their first game of the day that was on Facebook. And there were like 450 people watching that one. Because I was looking at it, making sure everything was going to work for me. UNLV had 3,000 people watching it. Might have been 2,900 being Utah State fans, but there were 3,000 people
based on
it.
The selfies that I saw people posting, like, hey, I'm at this concert, but still repping Utah State.
So, yeah, Facebook Live. It was mostly good.
But, okay, yes, the actual production value of, but what I was saying, what I actually was trying to say was, I'm watching and listening to the game, and I'm like, I lost count of how many touchdowns Utah State scored in the first quarter.
Yeah, it got out of hand quickly for UNLV. I think it was four touchdowns and I think it was 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes of game time.
Yeah.
Is what it was. It wasn't good.
And then the response to that is, Max, throw us back in this. And I don't want to rip Max Gillum, but there's certain limitations to how you can... You have to hide your quarterback.
Yeah, he's thrown over 30 times the last two games. Now, both have been, hey, we're down by four touchdowns, so... I guess we're going to throw it. But, like, yeah, UNLV is not winning a game if Max Gillum is throwing it 35 times. But they're just not, that's not going to happen. Like, Max Gillum needs to throw it 18 times, and they need to run the ball effectively every other carry, every other snap of the game. Back to your sort of original question of, are we getting the propane tank ready just in case the seat needs to be warmed? No. Tony Sanchez has a long leash.
Okay.
You can hold the propane tank. You can go buy it from the store, but it's, you're not going to light it anytime soon. Now, if they lose six more games by 30-plus points, maybe. Maybe we start looking at that. But, like, Sanchez has a long leash. And if you look at UNLV as a program, the off-field success is decent. It's not great. Like, you look at the practice facility is getting built. That's good. Now, they don't have all of the money to finish it. Like, the second floor is going to be empty. So that's not great. That's not a great thing to point to and say, look at what I've done for you off the field, and it's a half-completed building. But that's still good. That's still a step in the right direction. The recruiting has been better under Tony Sanchez. Like, the stars, the recruiting rankings, it's been better than the previous two coaches, which is about as far back as the recruiting rankings go. So the recruiting's been better. So off the field, like, Tony Sanchez has elevated UNLV. I don't think it's a huge step, but he's made them better. On the field, it's been good enough to get by. I mean, 2 wins to 3 wins to 4 wins to 5 wins. It's nothing amazing, but it's good enough to get by at UNLV. So, like, the leash is long, and a couple of bad weeks is not going to get Tony Sanchez fired. 6, 7, 8 in a row, that might, but 2 bad weeks is not going to get him fired.
What, after this game, what is your most optimistic final record?
4 wins.
Wow. Okay.
Well, maybe I should change that, because that's 4 wins is most optimistic if Armani Rodgers misses the rest of the season.
Okay.
If Armani Rodgers were to come back for maybe the last 2 games, they could still conceivably get 6. That's most optimistic.
What's your most realistic?
They beat San Jose State, Armani Rodgers comes back, and they beat Nevada.
Nevada's been hanging in some of these games against better opponents.
Yeah, they're decent. They're decent. There's not that they're bad, but that's kind of how I would think. If Armani comes back and is the Armani Rodgers that we know he is, like, the problem is, like, if Armani Rodgers comes back and he's somewhat limited running, that's not good. Like, you just don't bring him back at that point. You just don't bring him back at that point, though, would be my guess. Like, if he comes back, he's got a toe injury. So if it's like, all right, Armani can play, but he's only 50% of the runner that he used to be, there's no point. Like, just sit him out and hope that you can get a medical redshirt, even though he's already played 4 games.
Julio Jones one time went for almost 300 yards with half a toe.
All right. So, wait, should UNLV cut all of their receivers' toes in half?
No, I'm saying just
would,
like, I'm just saying, Armani could, you know, just clip, yeah, that bad boy up.
But I
no
think,
more toe problem.
I think you're looking at 3 to 4 win season is probably what you're looking at. Where they, it's hard to say UNLV is going to beat San Jose State after the last 2 weeks, but San Jose State did just lose to Army 52-3. So San Jose State is really bad.
Our Army's really good.
Maybe Army should be in the playoff discussion. So yeah, I would guess 4 wins is what they finish with at the end of the year, because I do think these last 2 weeks are like, that's your rock bottom. They have to play Fresno State and San Diego State, and they could lose by 30 again. But I think the last 2 weeks, the way UNLV's played it, that's as bad as it gets. Now, they've done it 2 weeks in a row. They might still do it for 6 more weeks, but I think they'll get better from here on out and be able to beat a San Jose State and actually give a Nevada or Hawaii a game, something like that.
Oh, okay.
Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try to be connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
Bischoff.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Señores, una vez más, el disparo. ¡Gol!
señores. Cae la anotación de Vegas, Golden Knights. 4-2, Gerber Castro.
Buen gol, buen gol.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
The Golden Knights beat the Flyers 1-0. Everything's okay in the world. They're perfectly fine. You know what's so great about this? The Golden Knights and UNLV football have the same record. And the tone around the two teams is completely different at the moment. It's great. Marc-Andre Fleury was outstanding, though, and he is the only reason the Golden Knights won. Last week, we spent a lot of the week trying to figure out, are the Golden Knights really bad? Or are they okay? What's wrong? And most of the time I told you their underlying numbers suggested they were okay. Their shot attempts, their scoring chances. I think they were second, allowing the second fewest scoring chances against per 60 minutes and like the eighth fewest high danger chances against per 60 minutes. Like the underlying numbers were pretty good. They were just losing games.
Well, and I think you also said that their shots were, they were, every game they lost, they led in shots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So that can't, like,
the numbers were good. The advanced stats suggested the Golden Knights were better than a 1-4 team. But against Philly on Saturday, the Golden Knights allowed the most shot attempts they have all season, the most scoring chances they have all season, and the most high-danger chances they have all season. They gave up 16 high-danger chances to the Flyers. Before that, they came in averaging allowing 8 per game. Worst defensive game of the year, and they won 1-0. So math is irrelevant. Just throw away all stats.
Hockey's weird, man.
But it comes back to Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, he was unreal. And there's good and bad from that. The good is that Marc-Andre Fleury played like the best goalie in the NHL. And if you get that Marc-Andre Fleury, the Golden Knights are going to win a lot of games. It's a big reason behind last season's success. It's Marc-Andre Fleury being great. He was awesome for the 40 games that he played. The bad, though, is that the Golden Knights needed Marc-Andre Fleury to be the best goalie in hockey to win that game 1-0. Like, the only way they win that game is if Marc-Andre Fleury is the best goalie in hockey. Any other performance by a goalie, and they lose that one 3-4-0 or 3-4-1. Like, Fleury had to bail them out. So there's good and bad from that. Like, you got Marc-Andre Fleury being awesome, but you needed Marc-Andre Fleury being awesome to win the game. We'll see. I would think that Marc-Andre Fleury is A, not going to play that awesome the rest of the season, but B, the Golden Knights will also continue to play better, similar to how they were in the first 5 games, even though they were 1-4. One other point on the Golden Knights. This is something that Ryan Wallace has been yelling at me for like a week. This team can't score. Like, the offense is just non-existent at the moment. Like, they needed Cody Eakin to put the puck in the top corner in the final 2 minutes to salvage that Marc-Andre Fleury performance. Like, Cody Eakin's not your goal scorer. Like, that's not who you're turning to be like, yeah, save us. So, like, to look into some of the numbers for this team offensively, the first line has produced a little bit less this season in terms of like shot attempts and scoring chances and high danger chances. It's not huge, but they've produced a little bit less than they were last year. But the biggest difference is shooting percentage. William Karlsson scored 43 goals last year. His shooting percentage was 23%. He hasn't scored this season. Shooting percentage is 0%, obviously. Like, that's the biggest difference on the first line right now. It's not Marchessault or Riley Smith doing anything different. It's that William Karlsson isn't actually scoring yet. Karlsson last year had one stretch where he went 6 games without scoring. That was the first 6 games of the year, just like this year. So this was, for Karlsson last season, this was like as bad as it got in terms of a goal-scoring drought. Now, again, didn't score in the first 6 last year, then ended up with 43, so maybe that happens. The big difference was he wasn't playing on the top line in the first 6 games last year. They were still juggling their lines and didn't know where he was going to be through the first 6 games. And honestly, the shooting percentage, it's more than William Karlsson. It's just Vegas, period. Right now, they're top 5 in total shot attempts. They're top 10 in high danger chances per 60 minutes. But they're second to last in hockey in shooting percentage at 5.2%. Last year, they were 5th in the league in shooting percentage at 10.1%. Like, they've literally cut it in half. So Vegas is getting nothing in terms of shooting percentage. That should go up. That's usually a regress to the mean type of number. So, oh yeah, one last thing. They're getting nothing from their defensemen on the offensive end. No defenseman has a goal. only three total assists from defensemen on the year. Like, Nate Schmidt is out, and no one stepped up on the offensive end to sort of help out. So, shots are down, by the way, from Colin Miller and Shea Theodore. So the offense is just not there at the moment. I don't know. We'll see. But Marc-Andre Fleury's got to be great.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Lexington Thomas left the game with an apparent head injury.
First play of the third quarter. Lexington Thomas seemed to get hit in the head pretty hard and then was even slammed to the ground. The replays, you couldn't really see if his head slammed into the ground as well. But he was down, had to be helped off the field, and never came back in the game. And when he walked off, he had his head lowered. Like, it didn't look good as he walked off the field. So it did look like a head injury. We haven't gotten an update on that. Tony Sanchez talked to the media this afternoon, so presumably we'll get one today. But yeah, Lexington Thomas.
He tweeted out that he's fine.
Did he tweet that he was fine? Okay.
I mean, if he's concussed, I'm not sure that that's really his. He really shouldn't be the one determining that.
I missed him tweeting out that he was good to go. But that's good. I mean, that's better than him not tweeting at all or whatever, not being able to tweet.
Just
whatever.
A bunch of emojis.
Yeah. So Lexington Thomas, we'll see. We'll get an update today. See how if he's able to go. But there could be a chance UNLV doesn't have Armani or Lexington Thomas in the next game, which would be really bad.
Tyleek Collins caught four passes for 139 yards and a touchdown.
He probably needs to become UNLV's sort of number one option in the passing game. He's really the only wide receiver that's shown any yards after catch ability.
Woods.
Darren Woods, no.
He's so big.
It's when we were talking about the roster and the construction of it, the wide receivers is part of that. None of the wide receivers they brought in besides Tyleek Collins is a, hey, we're going to throw you the ball at the line of scrimmage. You're going to break a tackle and take this for 15 yards.
To me, Woods is a go post up a man and catch this ball.
Max Gillum can't do that.
Oh, well, yeah, but
that's what I'm saying. Like, with Max Gillum as the quarterback, Tyleek Collins needs to be the number one option because he's the one that's shown, hey, we can throw it to him and he can make some guys miss in space. Like, they need more Tyleek Collins. That's the guy you want with the ball.
There's the snap. Hicken. Now the kick is blocked. The kick is blocked by Utah State. Picked up by Utah State. Touchdown, Utah State.
Very succinct call from Russ Langer there.
I love it.
I'm not even sure it was blocked. More so, it was just taken out of the hands of Hayes Hicken as he was trying to drop it to punt it. Hicken didn't actually swing to kick the ball. I think it was just taken right out of his hand. So they didn't fumble a punt return, but they did give up a touchdown when trying to punt. But special teams for UNLV, I mean, it's every week it's bizarre. I mean, this game started, UNLV's first two kickoffs in this game went out of bounds.
Wind was a factor.
And then Utah State's kicker, who hadn't missed a field goal all year, missed two.
Wind was a factor.
Not that. He missed like a 24-yard field goal. It wasn't that big of a factor. But like every UNLV game, something bizarre happens in special teams.
At one point, wasn't Higgins like averaging like 40 yards a punt?
More than that.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean in the game or for the season?
For the season.
Oh, no. I mean, more than that. He was like top five in the country for, well, he probably still is. That doesn't count against you when they just take it out of your hand. That's not a negative punt.
Lights FC will not bring Isidro Sanchez back as head coach in 2019.
Got all that right?
I don't know. Did I?
You did?
No Lights fits. We say the word Sanchez on almost every show, so if I mess that up, we might have a problem.
So Lights lost their last game of the season on Saturday. They announced on Sunday that their coach would not be back. Chalice was the technical director. He quit last month. Isidro was his son and was the head coach. Probably for the best because they went 8-19-7 and just the style of soccer they played was inefficient. Like, they played the mid-range jumper version of soccer, and it's just like, in soccer you want short passes on the ground, keep possession, but Lights FC were just, all right, we're bombing everything over the top and we're going to try to cross it in from the outside. And those are the mid-range jumpers of soccer. Like, they're very inefficient. You just have to do them a bunch to finally score, and that's kind of how Lights games went this year. They did finish 12th in the league, 34 teams, in goals with 50, but they gave up the fourth most with 74. They were dead last in passing accuracy, by the way. Oh, yes! One yellow card short of 100. We failed on the mission to get 100 yellow cards on the year. They ended up with 99. Disappointing. Still led the league, though.
Jake Bischoff was sent down to the AHL on Friday, but called back up on Sunday.
Why are they torturing me?
I was
genuinely mad on Friday when he got sent down.
Never mind.
It happened at like noon, so it was after the show. But I was genuinely disappointed that he got sent down. But then they called him back up, so everything's okay, I guess. Derek Engelin got hurt in the game on Saturday. Don't have an update on his status yet. Gerard Gallant talks to the media a little bit later today, so probably get an update there. But potentially Englund is out for some period of time, but we don't really know.
Well, this is Jared's stupid hockey question of the day. Why is it that when they say injuries, they go like upper body, lower body?
They're afraid.
Head.
They're afraid to give away any
soul.
Info.
Soul. Here is soul.
They're afraid to give away any info. Like, they're terrified that if they said, hey, Derek Englund hurt his left hand, that the next time he comes back and plays, whatever team is just going to target his left hand.
Jesus Christ.
Whenever they skate by him, they're just going to punch his left hand. Like, they're afraid of that, I guess.
That's really weird.
But yeah, so conceivably, Derek Englund could be out. He might not be, but he could be out for a little while. That would give them either Brad Hunt or Jake Bischoff coming into the lineup. So Jake Bischoff called up, and he still might not play, which our plea to the Golden Knights is this.
Are you worried this is going to end up just like Florida? Do you have the phone number of a cab company in every NHL city? Then you should try the number one defensive enhancement that is already sitting in your press box, Jake Bischoff. With Jake Bischoff, your pair will never be split at the blue line again. Cross-ice passes will be intercepted. The nightmares of Washington's power play will stop. Side effects of Jake Bischoff include better questions from Jesse Granger, fewer hat tricks from Chubby Men. So give Jake Bischoff a try before this city forgets what hockey is.
Derek Carr hurt his left arm, non-throwing arm, when he got tackled on the last offensive play.
I didn't mean to leave non-throwing arm in there for you. That was just a reminder to myself that Derek Carr is not left-handed.
But also, like, how many left-handed quarterbacks?
None. I don't think there's any. Yeah. It's almost AJ McCarron time.
Is it?
No.
Dude, you traded
fifth-round pick for him.
Yeah, you got to find out what you got in that.
The Raiders' offensive line is really bad now.
Well, yes.
I know what your point is going to be about Derek Carr doesn't handle pressure well. We're aware.
There's a point, though, where you as an offensive lineman are going, okay, I've got this guy. I've held him for 3.5 seconds. Either you need to adjust the pocket or I'm going to get leveraged.
The problem with that is that Colton Miller got knocked over twice in this game and both times led to a strip sack. Like,
all right, well, there's nothing you can do about that.
But like, the offensive line, like, they're down to their third string left guard. Colton Miller is playing at left tackle and he's hurt. Like,
yeah.
He's hurt, and they're like, yeah, go play. Like, we know, just go play through your injury. We know that our starting left guard has the same injury as you, and he's going to miss a couple games, but you're going to play through it. Good job. They also have a rookie right tackle right now in Brandon Parker. Like, it's not good. And so here's my question for you. What is the point of Derek Carr playing right now?
Well, I mean, valid, but I, honest to God, think John Gruden doesn't know that they're tanking.
Still,
I don't think he knows that they're tanking.
The thing on Derek Carr, like, I asked that question because, A, if you think he's a good quarterback, like, if you're out there and you think Derek Carr's, he's a good quarterback, once the Raiders start to rebuild, he's going to be the guy that's there and they're good, you shouldn't be playing him behind this offensive line for a 1-5 team.
Don't get him hurt.
Yeah. if you think Derek Carr, like both of us do, isn't that good,
and you should either trade him or let him walk at the end of the year,
then
don't get him hurt, because then his salary becomes guaranteed.
Then play A.J. McCarron? I mean, they don't really have like the young rookie they drafted to take over, so playing A.J. McCarron's not really a play for the future either. But it's just like, why is Derek Carr playing? Like, he's just going to get hurt behind a bad offensive line now, and you're not trying to win. So it's, I don't know, it's just... You can make the argument that Derek Carr shouldn't play the rest of the year.
Not to make this a thing that doesn't actually exist, because it doesn't, but there is a history of people named D. Carr in the league getting hit so much that they start to develop problems. The Raiders are trying to trade Amari Cooper.
Jay Glazer reported this on Fox, but let's go tanking. Trade Bruce Irvin, too, or anyone else you can get some value for, some picks for.
Who was the safety that they were?
Oh, Carl Joseph as well.
Yeah.
Who, I think he was inactive. I don't think, yeah, I think he's just been inactive or whatever. Yeah, they just need to trade everybody. Like, it's just tanking time. The funny thing with Cooper, well, we'll get to the funny thing with Cooper. He got hurt in this game as well and got taken out. Like, Derek Carr nearly got him killed by throwing a 5-yard slant on 2nd-and-20 at his ankle.
Yeah.
And Cooper got hit in the helmet, never came back in. One of the clearest helmet-to-helmet...
Oh, I totally disagree.
...things you'll see. What do you mean? It was helmet-to-helmet.
Yeah, but the defender was leading with his shoulder.
Doesn't matter. You hit him in the helmet. It doesn't have to be helmet-to-helmet. It can be shoulder-to-helmet. It can be forearm-to-helmet. It can be anything where your main point of contact is the guy's head is targeting. It doesn't have to be helmet-to-helmet. This one was, though.
I don't know. To me, it...
If you hit a guy, if your initial point of contact is the guy's head, that's targeting.
To me, it looked like one of those Wes Welker plays from the old Patriots where he would send him across the middle, throw it low, and just, hey, that's where his head wound up.
It doesn't matter.
It wound up where my shoulder.
It doesn't matter where his head wound up. You can't hit him there. That's what the rule is. They're trying to keep it safe. The funny thing, though, is that it seems like Derek Carr and Amari Cooper hate each other every time they talk to the media, because you'll hear Amari Cooper say, I'm open. They're just not throwing the ball to me. And then you'll hear Derek Carr say, when we call plays for him, he's not open. So I think they hate each other.
Jeff Grammer picked UNLV to finish 6th in the Mountain West.
What a hater! Jeff Grammer is the New Mexico beat writer for the Albuquerque Journal. He released his preseason poll yesterday. Tomorrow is Mountain West Media Summit for basketball. We'll be at the Cosmopolitan live, and we'll get the full media poll and overreact to where UNLV is ranked in the preseason, and I can't wait for it. I can't wait.
What? Why?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, basically, if this is to believe, we're projected to, like, make the tournament, and that's about it, or...
What tournament?
Mountain West.
Oh, everybody makes the Mountain
West
tournament.
No, I mean, like, make it as a high seed.
Kind of high. Oh. 6 might be too high for them, too.
You're just brimming with optimism on a Monday.
Mike Grimala on What He Ate in Logan, Utah. Or no, Salt Lake City, Utah? Next.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Bischoff! You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
There's another green brother out there somewhere. Older, younger, doesn't matter. You put him on scholarship, too. I'd put two other greens on scholarship to get Josh Green.
Mike Grimala of the Las Vegas Sun joins us because on Friday, we had to peer pressure him into trying a new restaurant in Salt Lake and or Logan, Utah. So, Mike Grimala, where did you eat on your weekend excursion in Utah?
Well, I have some okay news and some bad news on that front. The okay news is that I did go to that Perkins restaurant, and it was okay. I got their cheeseburger, fries, cinnamon roll, good deal, no complaints.
It's a breakfast place.
Well, it wasn't breakfast when I went there. It was like 2:30 in the afternoon by the time I was eating lunch. So what do you want me to do?
Was the cinnamon roll good?
Not really.
Oh, that's too bad.
And I tried it both ways. I tried it cold and I tried to heat it up, and neither one was very good. But that's okay. You know, it's dessert. I'll live with that. And then the bad news is, at the Utah State game in their press box, they actually had a media meal, and it was breadsticks and it was lasagna. And I've never had lasagna, so I was thinking, ooh, do I try this now and I'll have something to talk about? And it looked pretty good, too. So I took a block of that, and then I got back to my desk, and I was just like looking at it, and it was...
You got psyched out.
I couldn't pull the trigger. I went back and I just loaded up on breadsticks.
You got psyched out by the lasagna, didn't you?
Yeah, but almost. I came pretty close. I had silverware. I had the block of lasagna. It was almost across the goal line.
I'm loving the fact that the measurement for how to serve lasagna is blocks.
Yeah.
Well,
what else would it be?
How are you supposed to serve it? I honestly don't know. I'm asking, how do you serve it?
No,
I don't
like know, in no. blocks. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. It seems so obvious, but it takes an outsider to lasagna.
It was a brick of lasagna.
A brick of lasagna. So you got psyched out by the lasagna and could not eat it. Could not give it a try for us. That's too bad. Disappointed.
But the breadsticks were good.
The breadsticks were good.
I can report that.
All right. The only question for you about UNLV football, how was Tony Sanchez in the postgame presser?
He was measured. He was. You could tell he was trying to throw more, you know, we and us in there, because, you know, I'm much like, you know, during the game, you know, once it gets to, you know, 20-point deficit, 30-point deficit, 40-point deficit, you know, you're start thinking about the post game, and I'm thinking, you know, how is Tony Sanchez going to handle this? You know, last week he went out and he torched the team, and he called out some players individually. And I'm thinking, you know, you can't really do that 2 weeks in a row, probably. So he came out and he was still pointing out, you know, individual mistakes and, you know, individual players and individual plays, but without using their names. He's saying, you know, we missed a block on the punt return and on the punt and got the punt blocked, and we stopped playing after an offside and gave up a long touchdown. So he's, you know, he's still calling out those single individual plays, but, you know, he was more conscientious of including himself in that assessment.
Go eat some lasagna, Mike.
Why?
that was me ending the interview, telling you to go eat some lasagna and get out of here.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thanks, guys.
Mike Romala of the Las Vegas Sun, terrified of lasagna.
Just the fact that they do serve it in blocks, and it takes someone who's never had lasagna to figure that out.
I'll have one block of lasagna. That was good that you turned away from the mic as you were talking to give the effect of running away from the mic.
Yes, that was what I was trying to do.
Yeah. The Raiders lost 27-3.
Did that on purpose.
Do we need to start celebrating? Like, legit celebrating these games? Like, I know we're on board with, like, they're tanking. But, man, this is 2 weeks in a row that they have turned in one hell of a tank job. Like, 2 weeks in a row where it's like, they're not winning this game. Like, you know from the start, they're not winning that game. Like, Seattle went down and scored in the opening possession. It was over. That's great. That's tremendous tanking.
Yeah.
You can't even accidentally win the game.
The best pass of the game happened on a hold call.
The Raiders had 185 total yards in this game.
How much of that was Marshawn Lynch?
Derek Carr, only like 43.
Really? Because he seemed to be the only person who was effective.
Derek Carr ran for like 30-something yards. That was their best offense. Derek Carr averaged, he completed over 70% of his passes again, but he averaged 3.4 yards per attempt.
Yeah. The passing chart that you showed me, or the completed passes chart you showed me, was laughable.
He attempted two passes over 10 yards in this game. Technically three, but the one to Amari Cooper got called back for holding. But two passes over 10 yards in the air. Like, when I chart Armani Rodgers and then come over here and I'm like, they need to stop asking him to throw it deep. Like, UNLV has bad quarterbacks at the college level throw the ball over 10 yards in the air way more than twice a game. Derek Carr is getting paid $25 million and they don't ask him to throw the ball down the field.
I'm not sure that they're not asking him. I think that...
Or he's not. Something.
He's a...
Or the offensive line is so bad.
Down machine.
The offensive line is so bad that Colton Miller gets pushed into his lap a second after the snap sometimes.
Well, but even the biggest thing I noticed, that even when he had a clean pocket, he wasn't... He was looking for, okay, when is the running back going to, like, pop loose from his block so that I can check down to him?
The Seahawks' final drive took the last 8:25 off the clock.
Woof.
Well, it's an incredible tank job. The problem with it, though, is that, like, this is the worst tank job in terms of, like, what are you looking forward to? Like, normally when teams tank, there's, like, some young players that you're like, hey, that guy might be a part of the future. You can be excited to watch that guy play.
You go give some people some reps.
Gary and Conley did not play a defensive snap in this game. He played 3 special team snaps. Instead, it was Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, Leon Hall, both over the age of 32, and then Rashawn Melvin, Daryl Worley is 24, so he's younger as well. But, like, you drafted Gary and Conley. I know John Gruden didn't, but you drafted Gary and Conley in the first round in 2017, and he played 0 snaps in this game. If you're tanking, and they are, Gary and Conley should be playing every single snap.
He can't be any worse than Dominique Rogers-Cromartie.
Absolutely cannot be.
There was a play where Dominique Rogers-Cromartie just whiffed on the tackle and then kind of just, like, got up and just was like, I'm not running after him. Like, I missed. So it's over.
Gary and Conley plays no snaps. Defensively, they do have Arden Key and Mo Hurst on the defensive line, and those guys are getting snaps, but the Raiders aren't getting any pressure from their defensive line, so you can maybe be excited to watch those two guys play, but they're just not getting anything defensively.
There was a play that Arden Key basically had Russell Wilson because Russell Wilson ran out of the back of the pocket and went, oh, I'm faster than him, and he's not. But everyone online was like, yeah, that's how we're going to get pressure. Russell Wilson doing the thing where he runs out the back of the pocket? That's our plan. That's our game plan.
And then you look on the offensive side, and Colton Miller was your first-round pick this year. Brandon Parker was your third-round pick. And they're playing at left tackle and right tackle. So, yeah, be excited about Brandon Parker. You could be excited about Colton Miller, but they're playing him hurt. And, like, I don't understand what they're doing with him playing hurt.
I'm really confused as to the fact, like, are there no free agent, like, tackles available that you can't just go? Because the swing tackle, the guy who normally is the guy you bring in as, like, okay, this guy needs some rest, he's playing guard.
Yeah. Like, it makes, like, offensively, and that's it as far as, like, young players go. Like, love Marshawn Lynch, but Marshawn Lynch isn't a running back for a tanking team. Like, he's in his 30s. Like, this might be his last season. He might retire in the middle of the season pretty soon, but, like, love Marshawn Lynch, but there's no point in, like, Marshawn Lynch being a focal part of this team if you're tanking. Derek Carr, neither one of us think he's the quarterback of the future. Like, you're not getting excited about Derek Carr throwing it behind the line of scrimmage 35 times in a game when you're losing by 3 touchdowns. And then the wide receivers,
they have no idea how to use Martavis Bryant.
Like,
he's young,
I guess,
and they can't figure out how to use him.
So I guess Martavis Bryant is what you're excited for. It's just they're tanking. It's very clear they're tanking, and if your team is tanking, you want them to lose. But it's like, it's not, and it, like, tanks can be enjoyable as a fan because you can look at things and say,
suck for luck.
Yeah, but you can look at things and say, that's the future. Like, that's what this is a guy we're excited about. Yes, we suck now, but that guy's gonna help us win in 2 or 3 years. And, like, the Raiders don't, who is that? It might be Gary and Conley, but they're not playing him. It could be Colton Miller, but they're making him play through an injury. Like, it's a miserable tank. It's a miserable experience to tank. And, like, they seem to have even screwed up the Khalil Mack trade part of it, too. Even, I know the Bears lost, but they're still, it's not like the Bears are going to give you a top 10 pick either. So, I don't know. It's why when you tank, you go all in on the tank. Like, you don't do it halfway. You don't go sign a bunch of 32-year-olds. You go all in on the tank. Say, all right, let's go find some young guys. See if these guys are going to be any good in the future.
It's not like you didn't just see Philadelphia do this. Where even if you whiff on some of your first-round picks, you have enough of them because you suck for so long that you then are like, all right, all you young guys play together and figure it out. Then you bring in the veteran.
They're bad at tanking. They have a bye week. They really need to lose the next 2 games. Arizona and the Colts. Those are two other teams that are 1-5 at the moment. They really need to lose those ones. They're going to screw around and win those two games, aren't they?
Yeah.
And ruin their
make
draft
sure pick. They don't get Nick Bosa.
They're going to make sure they're drafting 11th instead of in the top five. So, yeah, they really need to come out of this bye week strong with a couple of losses. That's the key for the Raiders.
Yo, suck it, Tyler!